You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, hey, I am Captain Dean, and welcome back to another episode. My guest today is Mr. Andrew Hopper from Kiss Kiss Bang.
Yeah, what's up? Thank you. Hold your applause.
Did I say it correctly?
Yeah.
Because I think if you're from New England, you would say Andrew Hopper.
Man, I get Hooper all the time. And that is so aggravating because my last name is not spelt with two O's.
It's no, it
two
is
P's.
Not.
It's two
it
P's.
It is not. It's Hopper.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right. Hopper.
Hopper.
I get that Kangaroo the Hopper all the time. Man, Dish, I almost sued them, Dish Network, when they come out with the Hopper. But it is what it is. They seem to be doing fine off of it.
That is true. So. Well, these all start very simple, very to the point. First question is, where are you from?
I'm from Madisonville, Kentucky.
Madisonville?
Yeah, Hopkins County.
Yeah.
I was born there. I spent a lot of my childhood just south of there in Nortonville, Kentucky.
Okay.
When I was a teenager, we wound up moving to Dawson Springs. This is all in Hopkins County.
Right.
You know, these are just little smaller towns, you know.
Dawson Springs sounds like a TV show.
Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing about this town. No offense to anybody in Dawson. I love each and every one of you. Nothing about this town that needs to be a TV show made after him.
There you go.
I'm sorry. Okay. And so when I was like 17, or just turned 17, I moved down to Portland, Tennessee. Just made my way up to Bowling Green.
Right.
All in the name of music.
And so leading up to that, when did you get into music and what got you started on that path?
All right. So ever since that I can remember, I've had these two, at both of my grandparents, I had two wall pianos, those, you know, those bald mm-hmm. ones that you could get in tune, and then they was out of tune for the rest of the day and for the next 3 years or until, you know, you had them tuned.
Yeah.
So, man, when I was a baby, and then this literally, man, they had these before I was even born. So, when I was a baby, I was just, I have pictures of me just sitting on the stool, sitting there picking keys or whatever,
right,
playing keys, and eventually I got to where I could play chords because one of my pianos had the keys listed on them, like C and C
right,
sharp
right.
And you know,
yeah,
and so that's kind of how I figured out how to make chords.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, I just never stopped. I'll tell you this funny story. I was at let's see if I can remember correctly, I was probably like 5. Man, this is way far back. I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, so it's a wonder I'm pulling some shit out of my hat from when
it's
I was 5.
Okay. The things of importance are what
that's
stick
right.
With you, right.
That's right.
Breakfast
exactly
doesn't
right.
stick with you.
No,
it's
it
temporary.
Goes straight through me every time. So when I was like probably 5, we was all at my mamaw's house, and we was just gathered around doing whatever's, and they'd said, you know, Andrew, won't you play something on the piano, you know, show everybody what you can do, I guess. And I was like, okay. So I got on the piano, and man, I had done, it was like a regular chord and a suspended chord. I'd made this progression.
Mm-hmm.
So I still use this progression this day. I don't know why. It just, what you said, the important things stick with you,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, yeah, but man, who's trying to play Mary Had a Little Lamb, you know? So I started playing this song I just wrote with these two chords and, you know, the little progression.
Right.
And I get about halfway through it, and my aunt's like, no, you should play Mary Had a Little Lamb. That's what I want to hear. I don't give a fuck what you want to hear. I'm sorry. I don't even know if
no,
I can get
okay.
down here.
There's no FCC on this.
Okay, cool. I come with a disclaimer.
Fuck Mary.
come with a disclaimer. no, so... Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I played piano up until I got a guitar.
Self-taught?
Yeah.
No lessons?
Well, not
just,
on
it
piano.
It was there. You kind of played around on it, but did anyone ever, like, show you anything?
No. Okay. Yeah, but I will say, and I'm very glad about that, I'm very glad looking back now. A lot of times you look back and you're like, dude, why the hell, why was that even a thing? Why
right.
was there pianos around when I was, I don't know.
No, I get it, because I grew up, my grandmother had an organ in
See,
her
that'd
house.
Be so cool. I'd love that.
Every time we'd go visit, we'd tinker around on the organ.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
It was fun.
And you're wearing a Chicago hat, and I don't even know, is that a Cubs hat or what?
Yes,
what,
it is.
Good, I'm a Cubs fan. So, If you know, I posted a baby picture today. I had a little cub.
I saw that.
Yeah. What about that?
That's true.
Running the game since 93. No, but Wrigley's
My uncle worked at Wrigley Field.
Oh, I'm so jealous. That's awesome.
He was, I'm trying to think of what exactly he did.
Dream job, anything at Wrigley.
He did something. He was involved with a beer company. They lived in Crete, which is in the Chicago Heights. Mm-hmm. So it was about 30 miles south of downtown Chicago is where my great aunt and uncle lived. And my uncle Ken worked for a beer company in the Chicago area, and he would go to various places to change out kegs and, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked at, like, various bowling alleys and various things, but he also worked at Wrigley Field.
Wrigley was one of his stops. Yeah. That's tight.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is, man. And
that would have been in, like, the 60s, 70s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Yeah. See, it's funny. I was telling I think me and Trevor was actually talking the other day about the organ at Wrigley. And it's not, we was thinking maybe might have been a Hammond. It's not a Hammond. And I can't even remember what the name of it is right now. But, dude, that's what I want to go experience a Cubs game, but I really want to just hear the organ come through the pipes, man. That is the one of the oldest. Actually, yep. I think it is the oldest now stadium.
In stadiums, yeah, I believe so.
Dude, got to. I got to.
Yeah, I'm a Cubs fan. Not ashamed.
So, going back to the piano, like, you know, you wonder why. Like, I question myself a lot. Like, man, I don't know why I did that. But it kind of, it just made me better.
It's fate. Because you can't question fate.
Yes.
That shit was meant to be, and that's why you've been on this path since you were that young of a kid.
All right, so I'm going to elaborate.
I can relate to you on that.
I'm going to elaborate on what you just said. You're talking about fate. I think that probably so, because at that young of an age, mm-hmm. I was training my most important instrument that I use, that I've ever used, and that is my ear.
Yeah.
That is my ear, dude. Listen, man, when we started this band, I'm a guitar player, bro. When we started this band, I had no clue how to play bass. I just knew the notes. And I still don't know how to play bass. I don't claim to. You know, I'm not a bass player, bro.
Always looked at bass as like rhythm guitar.
It can be.
There are bass players that really dive into it. But I think of it more as like jazz, or the ones that truly play it as an individual separate instrument.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
But then you've got all these guys that just play the root notes and play for the song. To me, mm-hmm. it's just your rhythm guitar, but big,
honestly,
heavy, low strings.
Right. And I think everybody kind of hates on the bass being a rhythm guitar. But honestly, look at somebody like Duff McKagan.
Yeah.
Bro, he was a guitar player, and he come out and he said,
there's a perfect example.
He said 100 times, dude, I don't touch this bass unless if we're playing.
Yeah.
I'm a guitar player.
Yeah.
And he did a very good job, and still does, of working, of still, you know, being that rhythm, but still working in extra little runs and extra little things.
He's
I picked up a lot from him.
It.
He absolutely is, man. So, like I said, training my ear from that young of an age, man, because I picked up bass, learned it, and harmonies too, man. Mm-hmm. I have never in my life ever sung a harmony note. Mm-hmm. I was a main vocal guy. I'd never had the ear for that. I was never taught that. You know, I could just hear them, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. Wish I could do it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, me and Trevor started singing together, and, dude, once I figured out how to do it, floodgates opened up.
You all met for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everything you've just described is like the ideal story of a musician's path, if it's meant to be.
Well, let me tell you something. I hope it's meant to be, because life outside of music
sucks.
It's pretty
obvious it is. I mean, look what you've done in just these years of, you know.
Well, thank you, man.
You know, you've done a lot in such a short amount of time. But starting on piano, because mm-hmm. it was in the house.
Right.
When did you graduate to guitar, and when did music come into your life in forms of bands
right.
videos and that kind of stuff? Like, when did that stuff really come to you and you got hit with it and said, this is what I have to do?
So, going into that, Funny thing is, I got my I got my first guitar at 10 years old.
Okay.
And before I got that guitar, I didn't even want to play guitar. I wanted to play a saxophone.
Interesting.
My granddad and my granny, I lost my granddad when I was 13. My granny is still my favorite person on this whole world, whatever. They was like, you know, what do you want? Like, what kind of instrument you want? Because I was always beating on shit, right, banging on shit. I'm in the back of the van, like, we're trying to go to church or whatever, and I'm back here. I got a beat going. Mom's like, please stop.
Certain seats can have a cool tone to
I'm telling you, man. You'd be surprised, man. You can get some beats.
Yeah, the headrest and the armrest.
Everything, man.
It's a full kit back there.
So they was like, you know, what kind of instrument you want? And I was like, I want a saxophone. I think I just heard Bob Seger at that point in time.
Okay.
I think that was,
yeah,
that had been playing through the house somewhere, and I heard that solo. So, but no, all right. So I got my first guitar at 10, and I took lessons for a few months. I think it was a few months. I don't really know how long it was. It wasn't very long at all, right, man. Because when I started playing guitar, it really wasn't like a number one thing for me. It wasn't. You know,
just a music. It was another musical instrument you wanted to tinker on.
Right. At first, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was just something that was
because,
lying around.
Like you said, if you're tapping and beating on stuff, you've got rhythm. But you didn't set out to be a drummer,
right?
You messed around with piano, which, mm-hmm, is kind of a mixture of a percussion instrument because you're hitting shit,
mm-hmm,
but it's also got melody to it,
yeah,
which ties in with how guitar and guitar notes and scales and all that stuff they all intertwine.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you kind of hit on three things right there that all play a role in the same universe, mm-hmm, but yet also are approachable differently.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, you're right.
That's deep.
Dude, I swear to God, man, I look back at it all the time and like, I grew up listening to like country music, 90s
yeah,
country music.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was in your life?
Okay, dude.
I mean, because if you're playing piano at such a young age,
mm-hmm,
not only learning Mary Had a Little Lamb, but writing your own shit.
Right.
What was in your house?
That was just a two progression chord.
Oh,
we'll call it. That was my own song. That's copyrighted. what was playing in the house, dude? Literally everything.
Yeah.
So at one of my grandparents' house, they are very—they're very Pentecostal, very strict. So the Crab family, shout out to them. Ugh. The Crab family, the Hoppers—they was really proud of them.
Yeah.
These are all gospel, bluegrass gospel, okay, you know, on cassettes, bro.
But that's deep stuff, though. I mean, there's some good stuff out there.
Right.
I mean, musically speaking.
No, it really was. I just got so burnt out on it.
I
you know what I'm saying? But no, it was.
You can listen to the guitar player and be like, "Damn, that dude's hot."
Well, the funny thing was, and then so growing up, you know, I still listen to country music,
right,
and '90s country, whatever, all of it. So when I started playing guitar and I started learning the chords, what I did to practice was I would listen to the radio. I had a capo, had a little Indiana acoustic guitar. I'd listen to the radio, and then by first chorus, second verse, I had the whole song.
Hmm.
Like, because I mean, if you look at it, most songs you have your intro and you have a verse. This is all played certain ways. You know what I mean? If you figure out the progressions, you know the song.
Oh yeah, I mean, if it's a natural gift to someone, it comes easy.
I have worked hard on it.
Of course you have, but you didn't have to work as hard as some people.
As some, I absolutely agree.
So
absolutely agree.
There is the difference between the book taught and the natural gift that just needs a little bit of showing and a little bit of inspiration.
Well, man,
but it doesn't take much for some people to just instantly get it. And some people I know have taken guitar lessons for 5 fucking years, and they still struggle to go from D to G.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're out there. But you were the natural gift.
I can't deny that.
Exactly.
But I will say though,
accept it.
I have to because like training my ear at a young age, I cannot like credit that enough with just on the, because man, think about it. If you have a piano, you can play just about anything
you
want on a piano. You can play a guitar solo. Yep. You can do, I'll be honest with you. I'll go and say this. I've been thinking about starting to write bass lines on a piano because just kind of all the keys are there.
Right.
It might be something cool.
It's cool to hear it from a different sound angle.
Yeah.
And then transfer it over.
Well, totally.
Or vice versa. Like, you can do it either way. But yeah, I totally get what you mean.
Well, I've really been into Gary Clark Jr. here lately. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching his, like, so his band, I mean, his band, you know, they do interchange, but I've been watching, like, his auxiliary player in particular. Look, right. His whole band is dope.
Oh, yeah.
His whole band is dope.
It's phenomenal.
But that auxiliary player, you know, he's got two sets of keyboards, but on his top, he's playing bass lines mm-hmm. over top. So the bass player is not really playing these eccentric bass lines. He's just got that clean bass tone, real right. snappy, super tight, super right. dope. And then you've got your auxiliary player that's actually playing the actual, I guess, bass line.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of what triggered that thought. Now, okay. I'll follow up with you on that because I don't know how that's going to turn out. It could turn out like shit. I'll let you know.
But, like, you said gospel and, like, I guess church music mm-hmm. was big as a child.
Right. And
what was the first thing that came to you and you went, holy fuck, that's awesome?
Okay.
I'm excited to see what band it was.
Okay.
Because there's usually like the main top 10 names that you hear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious if it was either one of those or something different. But
no, it probably is. There was really two bands that done it for me.
Good.
The first one, man, I have to give credit where credit's due, man. One of my favorite bands and most influential bands, this is going to catch everybody by surprise.
That's
everybody.
Good.
Everybody. I
That's
mean,
a
I,
good thing,
I'm
though.
Giving you this with a little gift wrap up on top. Yeah. Man, and the guys make fun of me for all the time for this, but whatever.
Fuck them.
No, so for real. First band I really got into, and to this day still my most band, or the biggest band I'm influenced by, maybe the most influential band, maybe is how I'm trying to word it, but Switchfoot. They have, yeah,
really?
Dude, bro, when that beautiful Letdown record come out, meant uh-huh. I got hit with Meant to Live. That whole riff, to my knowledge, there's never been a riff wrote like that.
Okay.
Because that goes, you know, you have your bom, 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 bom. That's a whole separate guitar.
Yeah,
that's a
right.
whole nother, that's another riff in itself, just about.
Wow.
You know?
You're literally the first person I've ever heard say that.
Yeah. Well, it's for real, though. And then they, like, a band like them got me in. This is not my next one, but the band like them got me in at, like, Green Day.
Uh-huh.
And so when.
Which is the best part about music.
Yeah.
Is the domino.
Just what
effect.
Leads into.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean, cool. I'll discover a band and be like, you see the shirt they're wearing, or you read some interview and they're like, oh, I love this band and this band. And it's usually a band that you were like, well, I've heard of them.
Right.
I don't really know much about them. So it takes you down that pathway of going back in time to understand why the bass player of this band that influences you so much is so impacted by this band from the 70s or the 60s. Or,
yeah.
And so it takes you on this neat journey. So that obviously works for you.
Yeah. And I will say this about Switchfoot. Something that we've been talking about in the band here lately is, you know, we now have three guitar players.
Yeah.
So what does each guitar do at each given time? You know, at any given time, I guess. So, you know, we're experimenting with different reverbs, getting some spacey sounds, getting mm-hmm. this, that, the other, some really cool effects that are done live.
Right.
That's the big thing. And Switchfoot is a great example of that because they have two guitar players. They have a keyboard player who is also a guitar player as
right.
well. So he goes back and forth.
Right.
And the bass player
the
and drummer.
Ultimate utility guy.
Dude, absolutely, man. And they do a lot of those extra spacey sounds. It's really neat to kind of go through. And, like, I love watching rig rundowns.
Yeah.
And to watch Drew Shirley's rig rundown, and he shows how he gets all his sounds. It's so good, man. It's really good. But we got talking about Green Day, and you're a Green Day fan, right?
Oh, I love Green Day.
All right, dude. So answer me this, man. I've had this question literally for years now. So, honestly, ever since I moved to Bowling Green. Because Bowling Green's a different town.
Before we go any further.
Okay. My question's going to have to wait.
I'm just curious. When did you get to Bowling Green, or is that just part of the music journey leading up to...
100% a part of the music. I moved up here in 2015 of...
Oh, so was, that's not that long ago.
No, it was July of 2015.
I was just curious if you ended up here at a younger age or something. Okay. I moved back to Green Day.
Okay. So, can I ask my question now?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So I've had this question for you. I'm not used to being interviewed. That's cool. Hey, it's like you told me, man. It ain't nothing. We're just having a conversation,
right? Oh, no, we're just
right?
talking.
So, I got hit with this when I come to Bowling Green because, I don't know. All right, so we was talking about Green Day. American Idiot was the album for me.
Yeah,
that,
I've heard a lot of people of your generation say that.
Right, okay. So my generation's a very good way of putting it.
Yeah.
But, like, I literally asked somebody, the other, this has been a little bit ago, I guess, now, but I asked them, you know, what Green Day they like, and they was like, yeah, it's Dookie or Die. And I was like, what? They had so many.
They didn't get past Dookie?
Listen, man, I don't understand why American Idiot got shat on so much.
I don't think it did. I thought American Idiot was praised a lot more than anything prior to it. Because you have to look at it from this point. Shenanigans came out, which was kind of like a B-side rarity thing of like covers, B-sides, unreleased stuff, okay? That record came out after Warning, okay? So if you look at it from the point of view of Dookie came out in 94, and they went on a tear. Like, they didn't fuck around. They put out a record the next year in 95. They put out another record in 97, another record in 98. Like, they didn't fuck around. But by the time you got to Warning and Shenanigans, the change is starting to occur. Billy's getting stronger as a songwriter. Musically, they're getting more and more intricate in styles. They're experimenting with orchestrated things. Like, yeah. It changes. But in my opinion, it got more intense and more... It went up a level or two, like, musically speaking. Mm-hmm. That's just my point of view. As a Green Day fan, I look at the entire catalog and... love it all. I don't narrow it down to go, this is my favorite record, this is my favorite song. I'm just a fan.
That's cool. I'm glad you said it like that because, well, when I, from my, like, when somebody's saying, I try to keep open, like, I'm open-minded.
Right.
So whenever they said, specifically said, Dookie or Die, I think
I
that was more
that.
So of a term of, like, everything
Does that mean they
pre-American
like Idiot.
No, I think it was everything pre-American Idiot because American Idiot was, quote-unquote, too mainstream. But listen,
okay,
bro, I'm with you.
I don't get that.
I don't either.
I kind of do, but I kind of don't.
Well, listen, and here's why I don't get it.
It's a critic thing.
It totally is. But here's my thing about it. How is American Idiot not... love this song. Hole in the World by the Eagles. Love this song. It's playing right now. How is American
From the
Idiot...
Eagles to Green Day.
How's American Idiot by Green Day not the most rock and roll album of my generation? Because literally, this whole album, top to bottom...
Yeah.
Is nothing but a middle finger to whoever you want to point it to. Why?
Life had changed. You know, it's after 9/11.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Well, American Idiot's great.
It had to be
21st Century Breakdown is fucking great, and it came out after that. I mean, I can talk about every single Green Day album and break it down without criticizing it, because I don't look at it as good or bad. I look at it as fucking... Billy Joe Armstrong is a fucking brilliant songwriter.
Absolutely.
As a bass player, Mike Dirnt is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
As a drummer,
Trey Cool.
I look at Trey Cool as
so
like
dope.
Incredibly difficult to keep up with. I've met Trey Cool. It's a funny story if you're interested.
I am.
I've never seen Green Day in concert. But I went to, when I was living in Nashville, Trey Cool was playing Slingerland drums. They had come back in the mid to late 90s. I was at this like drum show or something, and Slingerland was based in Nashville. Well, Trey Cool was like their biggest fucking celebrity on the thing, right? So he's there in this event, in this thing, and they're having some sort of like it's like an event, you know, and there's people on stage and there's drum clinics and there's all this stuff.
Yeah.
Trey Cool is in the audience, like standing like fucking 3 or 4 people away from me, right? And as all this stuff's going on, people are just kind of watching the stage, but everybody keeps looking over at him like, Jesus Christ, that's fucking Trey Cool and Green Day. And he keeps hitting this one hitter, He keeps fucking getting stoned on a one hitter and just blowing smoke all over the air around everybody around him. And he didn't give a shit. I mean, he is as wild as you think.
That's the level of fucks I aspire not to give.
He's like that off stage.
I love it.
I don't think he's calm.
I love it.
And he's fucking great, but that's my Green Day story.
I love that. Man, that is like, I don't know if you're like me. Like, when I'm watching a band and they're like super dope, I'm super into them, super impressed. A part of me is like, yeah, I totally get, man. As a musician, I totally get, like, you might not always be the same person you are coming off that stage.
No, I mean, they're human.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. But, like, that is a cool story of that.
Yeah,
that, you know, Trey Cool is totally as dope as he is.
Like, everything I'd seen of them on TV, he lived up to it. Like, he was that guy.
Totally, he wasn't a letdown.
He
was
not incognito. He was not afraid to be himself. I loved it. I thought it was great.
That is
but
cool.
I'm an idiot. I didn't get a picture. I didn't get an autograph. I didn't. I talked to him, but I didn't really have anything to prove.
I don't think that I've ever like gotten a picture with anybody that.
I've had a few. But
I don't know that I've ever even met anybody. The
big one for me was Mitch Mitchell from Jimi Hendrix. Okay, I got to meet him, and then I got to tech for him.
That's tight.
It's like a story like that. It's hard to tell it because people just are like, "You what?" I'm like, "Yeah, it really happened." It was fun. No, I met a lot of famous people, but you know, it's like after like the fifth or sixth major celebrity you meet when you're in the music business, they just become people. Yeah. Kenny Rogers walked by me one day, and I was like, oh, fuck, there's Kenny Rogers.
I'd have fangirled over him.
I didn't fucking ask for an autograph or a picture. I didn't pester him.
Right.
I didn't ask him for anything. I didn't go up to him and go, oh, my God, I love The Gambler. I love Six Pack. Like, I just wanted to be like, hey, that's fucking Kenny Rogers. Yeah. How cool is that? Yeah. But no, anyway.
That's tight.
All right, okay. Green Day.
Okay.
Is not necessarily in your pedestal.
No,
but
okay.
Switchfoot
was
turned
totally
you on to a lot of bands, including Green Day. Download. What is your other big influence as a incoming into your life as a aspiring child musician?
Okay. So, let's fast forward a few years. I'm like 14 at this time.
Okay.
The ideal
years of musician either shit or get off the pot.
Yeah, absolutely. This is when the decision gets made.
Yep.
Okay, so and prior to these years, from 10 to 14, I had been listening to pretty much nothing but Switchfoot. I played a lot of their stuff. Like some of the stuff that I was, I guess, kind of tinkering with, quote-unquote, writing,
right,
was very Switchfoot-y or Switchfoot-esque, I guess. And then, all right, so I was very sheltered as a kid. My whole childhood, I was sheltered. We were very good church-going people, wholesome people. I don't know what happened. Anyhow, I was riding.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Yeah, rock and roll. So I was going to school one day. I was riding with my buddy. He came and picked me up, and he put in this Motley Crue CD. And believe it or not, man, that was the first.
That was it.
That was the one, man. Fucking, it was Dr. Feelgood.
Okay.
Great
record.
Yeah. So loud, so huge.
Yep.
I was like, what the fuck is this?
See, it's really cool to talk to guys like you that are just younger than me. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, well, you're at least 20 years younger than me.
I'll be 26 on the 24th.
Okay, you're about 15 years. But still, it's funny because I heard Motley Crue when Motley Crue was new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Live Wire and Shout at the Devil. Like,
yeah.
I caught all that. And then Theater of Pain, of course, was massive with Home Sweet Home.
Absolutely.
Smoking in the Boys Room. I mean, those videos played all the time on MTV. But yeah, when Girls came out, I thought that was great. And then I thought Dr. Feelgood was a fantastic record.
Mm-hmm.
That sounded better. Because Theater of Pain, if you listen to it now, it's very tame. Like, there's something, and I've had this conversation with a few people, and a lot of people out there will agree with this. If you listen to rock albums between 1986 and 1988, they sound weak. They don't have a lot of bass in them. They don't have a lot of grit.
Mm-hmm.
They're good, but they're not in your face,
so, like,
you know? But Dr. Feelgood is fucking phenomenal because Bob Rock,
yeah,
was behind the controls.
The Almighty.
He knew what he was doing, and he turned up the kick drum and the bass.
That's cool.
So that's
cool.
Why that record has a lot of balls. It's
so,
a great record.
And I wonder, man, it's funny because you know, like, I guess fabs come and go, trends come and go.
Oh, yeah.
And that had to have been a trend at the time. But the thing is, like...
What, sound-wise or just...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Mix-wise, man.
I think so. I mean, every record, in my opinion, between 87 and 88 is lacking bass.
But...
And I guarantee you could go through a list of records that came out in those years and be like, yeah, he's right.
But I wonder why, though. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand.
Because they should have all been mastered by the same big wig record major, you know, major record company people.
Yeah.
But, like, records from, like, Rat Out of the Cellar came out in 1984. It's got more balls to it than Cinderella's Long Cold Winter, which came out 4 years later. I could go on and on for days about this shit. But, like, there's something just interesting to me that bass guitar and kick drum and just that overall live kind of tone is missing from
all
records.
All the ass.
Yeah, it's like the late 80s got watered down.
Yeah. Nobody likes a flat ass.
I don't.
I mean, but why would you mix your song?
Makes the world go around.
Why would you mix your songs with a flat ass?
I don't know. I guess the cocaine was incredibly good.
I guess.
So is that it? Switchfoot.
Switchfoot Motley
Crue.
Yeah. So Motley Crue is the one that got me into it.
You were a teenager.
I was 14, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And then coming after that, dude.
The waterfall kind.
Oh yeah, dude. Overload. But mind you, man. Even though I'm really heavy into, or I say heavy. I mean, I was Motley Crue, and then I got introduced to Skid Row from that. Like,
yeah.
I guess, I mean, I was still jamming country, though. Honestly, probably a little more than...
And well, what country, though?
Okay, so, like, Alan Jackson. I'm a big dude. Honestly, Garth Brooks.
I mean, it was probably, the era.
Garth Brooks my favorite, man.
It was the era.
My favorite. He's got this, what is it?
You're talking 90s, right?
Yeah. What album is this? I think it's called The Chase, Garth Brooks. He's got this white, or no, it's not white. Is it red or white?
Well, there's the one album cover with the blue and black shirt and then the red and black
shirt. No, it's
shirt.
The red and black. Yeah. And he's got that
No
black
Fences?
Album.
No Fences
it's,
is
I think
the
it's
blue
the Chase.
Shirt.
I think it's what it's called. The red one. The red and black. I think it's called The Chase.
I guess.
It's got...
My wife has it.
I had them all. I still want that shirt. I remember when I was a kid, I was like, man, I want that shirt. And I still do.
See, when I was a kid, I wanted the Michael Jackson Thriller jacket.
The jacket? Those are so hot.
I never got the jacket, but I got the glove.
The one glove. That's hilarious. Man, I would love that jacket, though, now that you said that.
Oh, it's pretty cool.
Throw a little grease off in the hair. A little Jerry curl.
So, where did all of this music come to you from if you were in such a strict house?
Okay, so my dad, whenever he would take us to school or whatever, this fool here, man, he jammed like Will Smith. And, like, so, Willennium, mm-hmm. I listened to Willennium probably for, like, 2 months straight.
Wow.
Just on the way to school, back and forth. My mom was country. But, okay. Well, mind you, now listen, man, it's a very small town, very small area, so, like, the radio stations we did get, they weren't very good.
Right.
You know, we got a country station, and then there was, like, I think there was actually two countries. We were overloaded with country stations.
Of course.
So, you know, on 92.5, you could catch The Race. Or on 100.3, you could catch, you know, Tim McGraw, Brad Paisley. Mm-hmm. You know. I'm going to go home and watch The Race, but I'm going to listen to them in the meantime. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. But I'm trying to think, man. This is what I'm saying. Like, it's so weird. Like, looking back, like how all of this even got me to here. You know?
Well, because...
I can't piece that together.
Well, no, you can't, but, I mean, the fact of the matter is it did happen.
Yeah.
And so, to just go... when you say two bands like that,
mm-hmm.
and to be in the band you're in, I get it. Like, to me, those two main influences on you, I can see that shit in you when you're on stage.
Yeah.
Like, your influences come out. You're not ripping them off. Mm. You don't dress like Nikki Sixx.
No.
You don't play his basses. But your approach, your stage presence, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you've got that.
Thank you. Well,
and music
took a lot
speaking,
of practice,
you're
man.
Good.
Took a lot of practice. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I will say this, man. People talk a lot about just the kind of the honesty that this band has.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess to elaborate on that is... Like, we're not a gimmick band, obviously. We're not, like, You know, we're not dressing up in this or that and the other. We're really ourselves. I will say that 100%. Each and every person up on that stage is 100% themselves, and me included.
Right.
Dude, it's like, outside of music, man, life sucks. Sucks, bro. Sucks.
It has its moments.
Oh, dude. Moments, days, months, years. Sucks. Like, so, man, I mean, as cheesy and as corny as it is, man, kind of like that Fast and Furious in that 8 seconds. I'm free. No, but for real, in those 30 or 45, hour and a half, however, dude, when we're on stage, man, it's like, no, 100%. I'm so...
I've only seen you guys live three times. Open.
Three times?
Three times.
Hey, that's cool. that's
yeah, and I told Malcolm this. I was like, I came to see the CD release show at the Spillway.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a few years ago.
Was that open wide?
Yeah, I think so.
The full length?
I tried to get in. I couldn't even get in the parking lot.
Oh, really? That's cool.
And so I couldn't go. I was like, sucks, I can't even park. I'm not even going to try to go in. But no, I was like,
it's bittersweet.
I missed that show. But I've seen you guys three times live, and it's great. It's absolutely great.
Thank
you. And as we're speaking, yesterday afternoon, I saw Brian Locke from D93. And I was like, how is the Vet City thing? Because he was out there.
Mm-hmm.
For the radio station, he said, well, it was cool, but man, that Kiss Kiss Bang band, that's the real deal. I mean, because
awesome.
He's, you know, he doesn't get out much. He doesn't go out clubbing and stuff anymore.
Right.
But to finally catch a few of the local bands that he's heard about,
mm-hmm.
but he hasn't seen them live yet, he saw you guys.
I'm glad.
And that's a high compliment coming from someone like that.
I'm glad we fulfilled expectation. Because I don't ever get nervous. I don't ever worry about like us going up there and bombing.
You just do your thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So like,
you guys have fun. You've written good songs. You take it serious.
Well,
do your thing.
And I trust everybody I'm on stage with.
Oh yeah.
I know that they're tuned up. Look, and when we started this band, all of us in this band, we was very seasoned before we come into
as
musicians and as performers. Well, I was still coming into it as a performer, but. But we were very seasoned,
right.
And so that really helped with writing songs, and that really helped with live.
It's a great
launching
point
absolutely.
To have all of that behind you guys
absolutely.
Coming into it. You know, because I've seen Trevor in other projects, you know,
mm-hmm.
and obviously I've seen Clayton and other things, and he did great.
Yeah,
you know, that was what 10 years ago.
It seems like the thing is like when they talk about it, I'm like, oh well.
It
that
like
was just a few
ago.
Years ago, but then they're like, no, that was like 7, 8 years
like
ago.
10
I'm like,
years,
God,
yeah.
dang.
It's pretty wild, man.
But I forget Crowder's. This is going to be a jab in the gut.
Ultimate season.
He's pushing 30.
That's
Crowder
terrible.
Is.
He's old.
He is.
So old.
I forget he's that old.
Well, you know.
Yeah, that's all right.
Age means nothing.
That's
Look
right.
at me.
All
it's
right.
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
I still feel 30. I'd kill to be 30, but I feel 30 sometimes.
Dude, I don't feel anywhere near 30.
Well, you're in for a treat.
Mm.
Just wait.
I know.
You're going to love it.
Need to get to our chiropractor.
Yeah, I haven't done that part yet.
I need to have one of them on staff.
We have jumped ahead, so we're going to reel it in and go back to
I told
you being a teenager. No, it's fine.
I told you
I'd
chase rabbits.
I fucking do it, too. I'm talking, too. You're a teenager.
I'm a teenager.
You finally have fallen into the realms of the devil's music.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
When did you get guitar? When did you get started? What led you to bass, and how did all of that come about?
Okay. So, let's see. We're 15 now, 14, mm-hmm. 15 now.
Sure.
Something like that.
The prime age.
Yeah, absolutely. I left this part out, but from like 15 to 10, 10 to 15,
mm-hmm.
kind of had, you know, some home problems. I just wasn't in a good, I wouldn't say a good environment. My environment was fine. But, you know, just had a lot of shit.
I've been a teenager. You
know, right.
I get it.
So, like, what are you really supposed to do? I turned my guitar and I just started playing.
Exactly.
And I just dove into it. And that's really how my love for playing began was
right.
because it was my escape from everything else.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, it was dope. So that's the drive. That's what initially like started driving me to be better.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a couple youth bands with my church, even after, like, Motley Crue, you right. know, all that. Because I'm trying some shit out, you know what I'm saying?
But that was your launch into the world of Absolutely. Actually performing of actually with performing. Other people and stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
And
it's a common story, though.
Yeah, well, sure, man.
Which isn't a bad thing.
And, like, the thing, we wasn't good.
It doesn't matter,
you know,
though.
Well, but yeah, you're right. It doesn't matter.
That's part
because
of
it's
it.
All about, like...
You're supposed to suck for 5 years
you're
in
supposed
a garage.
To, yeah.
And then you meet other people that make you better.
Well, you gotta,
or you make
and,
them better.
Yeah, and you gotta learn how to jam with people too. You gotta learn how to feel people and
part of the process.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember it taking forever, and I don't really think it ever came together back then, but I've noticed now it's a lot more easier to gel with somebody, you know.
It's because you went through all that shit when you were young.
Younger, absolutely.
See,
absolutely.
I've been amazed of meeting a lot of guys that are like 19, 20, 22, and just starting to
playing
form
guitar.
Bands and play and stuff, and I'm like, man, I was doing that shit when I was 11.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird to me to see that, but you know, that's just... It's
everybody
a
has a different story.
And it's a path, and it's, yeah. it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can relate to you a lot on the age. Like, everything you've described sounds exactly like my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can relate to you on a lot of levels. But I was about your age at that point when I was getting in bands and stuff. So, yeah.
That's tight. well, and some, I guess I was probably like 16 or 17. I'd always been told, like, you know, I don't sing. Your voice ain't that good. All right.
I hear that today.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whatever.
So I didn't. but, right. Well, I started this job after school, and I was working one day, and this dude was singing a song I knew. You know, it was this old country song. I was humming it. He stopped, and he said, listen, he said, if you're going to, you know, if you know it, you're going to sing it, but you ain't going to hum it. You know, we're trying to make the day go by, you know.
Right.
So I was like, all right, well, hell with it. So I started singing, and he stopped me again, midway through the course or whatever, and he was like, dude, you can actually sing, and he was like, it's impressive, and I was like, well, that's a first. So then I started, like, really paying attention to my voice, and I was like, it's not bad. It's okay. I hate the tone of my voice. I do. I don't think...
You hear it the way other people do, though.
Right, that is true.
When I listen back to these interviews, I'm like, God,
I sound like such a dickhead.
Such a fucking dick.
No, totally.
But you have to get past that. You just look past it and go, this is me. This is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
There's the door. You know? You don't have to stick around.
All right, so it's fixing it. We're fixing it. If you're in golf terms, we're fixing to be in the heavy rough.
Go.
Okay. So I found out that I could somewhat hold a tune.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I played country music. I played rock music. And my voice was, I don't have a rock voice. I'm not suited for, my voice is not suited to sing main vocals in right. a rock band. So I started doing like country. I started, you know, I took my acoustic and on a weekend I'd go make $200, $300, sometimes $400 playing top 40 or
wow.
playing covers. Oh, dude.
And this is at 16?
No. This is at like 19, 20.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I did jump a little
no,
bit ahead.
No, that's fine.
I
mean, it's still in the same ballpark.
Yeah. Still an adolescent, maybe not. But yes. So once I found which I had already decided that I wanted to continue to play music. This was just an avenue that I was taking at that point in time. You know,
right.
going out and singing these covers and stuff like that. You know, and so I did that for a few years. Met up with a dude back home by the name of Drew Ladd, and we started picking, and we had this little country cover band. It was called Backwoods Brotherhood.
Okay.
Believe it or not,
would that be your first band?
Technically, yeah.
Okay.
I guess so. and I tell you this. Well, you know, we got to talking about Cody Kirby earlier before we
yeah.
started this. This is how we met.
Okay.
So it was February. It was freezing fucking cold, man. I'm talking. It had to have been under 25 degrees. There was no way. And we was practicing in this building in Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Well, there is a dude come walking down the street in cargo shorts and a t-shirt in 20 degree weather, and he's standing outside the front door looking in, just watching us, listening to us. I didn't know who he was, you know, but my guitar player recognized him, so he went up there and let him in, and he was like, He walks up and he's like, "What's up, man? You know, I'm Cody, whatever." And then my buddies was like, "Yeah, dude, he's a drummer. He's really fucking good. Really good. You need to have him jam a song." I was like, "All right, fuck it. Get up here. Let's play something." And, yeah, I fired my drummer on the spot for Cody Kirby.
You've known him for that long.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I did. I love that dude, man. Yeah. It has been a brother of mine ever since.
And that's really cool because that makes, since you are bass player now, mm-hmm. that makes you guys a really
so
strong
much,
rhythm
Yeah,
section.
I'm so comfortable with him. The thing, and like, too, I've noticed, you know, we've, when we do these little freestyle jams, we'll do jams, you know, during the set. We have no idea what we're going to play. No. We probably shouldn't do.
We probably start
rehearsing the shit.
Read it.
Yeah, but, and me and Cody will totally feel off each other. He'll give me cues, or I'll give him cues of when I'm hesitating or when I'm doing, you know, whatever. And we'll lock in, you know,
get that.
Create a pocket. Oh, man, it's so cool.
That's
so
cool. So you guys have known each other for a long time.
For a long time, man, yeah. So I did that for a few years. I met, you know, a lot of great musicians from Western Kentucky.
Does Hawkinsville have like a music scene, or is it just a place or two?
It's really
not much there.
Yeah, man, honestly,
I've driven through it a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know much about it.
If there is a scene, it's not. But listen, we are very, 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 very spoiled here in Bowling Green with this music scene.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say that we're spoiled. I think we're lucky.
We're lucky.
Yeah, because I've been to towns where they do have a few bars and they do have this, but they're mostly controlled by a cover band.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, they own that shit.
Mm-hmm.
They're house bands and all that. So I've seen that in other cities, you know, but
man,
that's nothing unusual.
There's not too many Bowling Greens around. I guarantee you that.
Oh, no.
I guarantee you that.
No, and I've been on vacation to places like Charleston, South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and I walk down the street at 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday night, and it's the same songs, a bunch of cover bands, and then you do find that one sketchy-looking club off to the side of the beaten path.
But it's got an
original
band.
And there's
an original
band in there, but they're normally, like, very mediocre. Like, you can tell it's just a bunch of fuck-ups fucking around, you know? It's like...
Totally.
But, you know, you could be witnessing something maybe down the road become something. But at that that moment for me to, you know, precisely see that, it's like, I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I get it. Man, I think we are. We're very lucky.
We are. Lucky is the better word.
Yeah.
But I mean, everybody says that Bowling Green's the next Seattle, and I really hope that's the case, because I've
been saying that for fucking 20 years.
Dude, listen, man, I think there's something really special here in town.
There is something special here, but unfortunately, people still leave.
Yeah.
And by the time I think our town could have actually been the next Seattle,
mm-hmm.
the music industry fucking collapsed. Or not necessarily collapsed, but just... There weren't labels going out looking for the next big thing and finding five bands in one town.
Yeah.
Like, that ended. So, I think bands still make it. Bands from here have made it because they have what it takes to make it, mm-hmm. and they have the right tools, I guess you could say. But there's a lot of great musicians in this town that are the ultimate procrastinating, lazy people that have the talent to be successful but don't understand the music business, and that
there's a lot to it
is the problem with our music.
All right, now I will go ahead and say this, as for on my end in this band, I am spoiled, because on my last band I did all the business and I fucking hated it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
It's not easy.
It's not. I don't like it,
and every day. You don't
I don't think a lot of people understand.
You think you make a poster, or you post something on Facebook, and you're done? No. Mm-mm. It's every fucking day.
Yeah.
You do something. You go to the radio. You go to this radio. You try to get on this television show. You try to get an article written up in a newspaper. You try to get some blogs written. You go on things like podcasts.
Yep.
You do shit every fucking
stay
day.
Busy. Absolutely.
To promote one show that's coming that, up a month and a
that
half.
That you hope 30 people's going to show up for it. I know, bro. I want to say, though, I'm going to give credit where credit's due. And I don't do this a lot, so he's got his one free one. But no, dude, Malcolm is the best business man this side of the Mississippi. I really do believe that. He's so, so good.
I can't remember which one of you told me Malcolm handled the business side. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, well, okay, that makes sense.
Oh, dude, he's so, so on his shit.
Yeah.
He
and
likes,
you all trust him. And that's the key.
Oh, no, you might be going a little far with
saying,
the trust word. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just saying.
No, absolutely.
You
absolutely
trust him enough to be like, if you think this is a good venue, if you think this is a good city to go to,
mm-hmm.
if you think releasing this out and doing this and that is the right thing to do, then do it.
Well,
so
I mean, we all
trust.
Well, let me back up on that. A lot of those things do get run by all of us.
Of course.
Like,
of course.
You know, if we're
you're
going
a real band, you actually
sure.
have meetings and shit.
Yeah, we do. We do.
what's that?
No, anymore we can't stand to look at each other, so we have this group message that we just text each other
on. Of course.
You know, that's how it works.
Those are fun.
Yeah. no, so, you know, if we get an offer or something from, or if we're trying to get into a new town, you know, he'll say, you know, what do y'all think about this date, that date? You know, we good, you know, we're
right.
good, we're good. You know, it's so, it's, I know that was a very condensed version of it, but there's about,
no,
but there's about five comments worth of jabs in
yeah.
between all those.
Yeah.
So we stay on each other.
I mean, I get it. People
yeah.
listening may not
it.
Be musicians or, you know, all that stuff.
If so. You're in a band with another person, if you're not hard on them, then you're not in a band.
It's true.
You got to have thick skin.
That's true.
All we do is fuck with each other.
Yeah. That took me a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? And I swear to God, I'm going to own it. Used to, I will say this. Trevor is the most sensitive one out of everybody. Used to be. And anymore, I'm going to hold that hat, man. I'm going to wear that hat. Yeah, I am. Anymore, I'm the first to get my fucking feelings hurt. First one. Crowder, I done got this look that I give Crowder when he hurts my feelings. And he's like, he'll stop. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay, we're good now.
You know what? That's how a band works, though.
Yeah,
that's a real band, people. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's a... It is a family.
Oh yeah,
so you
married,
have all those ups and downs.
You're married to these people.
Family,
yeah.
Type of thing.
100%. You're married to these people, man.
Yep.
I don't like. I don't really have any family close here. I don't. You know. I don't at
well,
all.
Well, speaking of that, you're in Hopkinsville.
Okay.
You're doing
I'm jumping ahead. Let's
no,
go.
No, it's fine. I'm trying to get to the point of where we are. You're doing your thing. You're testing waters. You're playing with jamming with people and bands and stuff. But eventually, you get from there to here. So
mm-hmm.
what was the transition of that time span?
Okay,
and
so...
And how did you get to bass?
Okay. So, this band, the we was... Backwoods Brotherhood, we was probably like a band for 3 years. It really all dissolved out because everybody had wives and kids, and I was the only one that was
yeah.
single, no kids. You know,
yep.
I was ready. Dude,
it's a tough thing to juggle,
man. It is so hard.
Yep.
It is so hard, and it's not. And like, you know, I would have guys be like, literally last minute, man, I can't do. I'm so sorry, brother. And it's not like I can't be mad at him.
No, I know.
You know, you got kids, you got yep. wives, you got families
as
that have to
first,
come before this.
It
has
to.
For me, it's a different story.
I get it.
Like, I'll split on something for this.
I'm with you on that.
You know what I mean? And I've done it many, many, many
I've
a time.
I've missed a lot of birthday parties because
yeah.
the show must go on.
I'm a piece of shit for the show going on. Like, and that's just, but that's where
no.
my head's at. That's where I have to be
it's
at.
It's okay. There's nothing wrong
you
with
you know?
It.
Yeah, totally.
You do what you have to do.
Right.
Other people do what they have to do, and that's just life.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. It takes you down all these weird back roads and shit.
Oh, yeah.
But, okay, so I'm traveling. So, you know, we did that for a few years, and like I said, it just dissolved out. And I got to a point where I was like, man, like, yeah, I'm making money. Some weekends I'm making just as much, if not more money on the weekends than I did at my 40-hour week job.
Crazy?
Oh, my God. Why did I want to go to work?
Yeah.
There for a while, I quit my job and just did that.
That's awesome.
And starved because of it. So I had to go back to work. But, okay, so we was doing that, and we was just practicing Hopkinsville because, like, that was where everybody was kind of centralized.
Right.
So I was driving from actually Franklin, Kentucky to
okay.
Hopkinsville, which is not bad. It's, you know,
no,
straight 100, Russellville.
45-minute drive.
Yeah, right about that. Yeah, 50-minute maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I was just getting to a point where, like, I was just kind of getting burned out, man. And by this time, I had actually come up to Bowling Green. And funny thing is I was playing Dublin's. we got to a point where we was playing Dublin's literally every other night that Trevor and Malcolm wasn't playing.
Okay.
And we had never met each other, never had run into each other. I had no idea who these fools were. They had no idea who I was. So they wound up, they come in one night while we were playing. And I mean, we just talked on a break, hit it off, man. Every, you know, fell in love with those dudes, man. They're great guys. And
what year was this?
This would have been, what year is this?
Well, you 2019? Said you got here in like 2015, right?
Yeah, so that was...
but you were living in Franklin, jamming with dudes in Hopkinsville, but you got gigs here.
Yeah.
Was that your introduction to the Bowling Green music scene?
Yeah, okay. So I was like, man, I'm jumping around all over.
No, it's fine. Right, it's a fucking podcast.
Oh, well.
Music.
So I was living in Franklin, and yeah, I would drive back and forth to Hopkinsville. I really wanted to come up to Bowling Green, though,
right,
because I had stumbled into Dublin's one night on a Thursday night and got drunk.
And stumbled out.
And stumbled out, right. And, well, and I had seen all the people, all the foot traffic. I was like,
right,
you know, because at that point in time, dude, it's like, yeah, I'm, mind you, my mentality this whole time is I'm going to play music for the rest of my life. I don't know how I'm going to get there yet,
right,
but right now I'm trying to make...
You never lost focus, though.
No, I'm trying to make a few dollars right now, though.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to eat. So when I seen all that foot traffic, all I'm thinking of is cha-ching, cha-ching, motherfucker. So I book a... This is funny. My very first show ever at Dublin's. It was on a Thursday night, and I played... Me and my guitar player played, and, you know, had a good turnout. You know, there's a lot of people came in and out, and I, at the end of the night, I went up and settled up. And for those that know Pauly Watkins, he used to be a co-owner of Dublin's. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, man. He said, we got to get you back in here on a weekend. He said, I can make some money off your ass. And then he goes, oh, by the way, your guitar player owes me $6.95. I'm like, man.
Whoa.
Man. Well, he got a little crazy on the beard.
Wow.
So, you know, I gave him $10 for a little tip. Called it a day, and we did great business ever since.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's, like I said, that just snowballed into us playing one night, Trevor and Malcolm playing another night, and then you had somebody like Goody whoever else.
Goody and the Bourbon Blues.
Oh, dude. I love Goody, man.
Yeah.
Love Goody.
Great band. Super fun guys to hang out with, too.
Oh, I love them. Love them. And so, yeah, and that's how we met, and then... dude, it just kind of snowballed. We just started jamming together, and it's not that I was even playing bass. We were just kind of, we'd all just sit around, pick guitars, play or whatever. And so a few months go by, and I move up here to Bowling Green. I actually move in with Trevor.
Okay.
And, there's no talk about a band at this point. My band's done. I'm done with that. Trevor and Malcolm, 449 had been done. They were done with that. Mm-hmm. So we were just kind of.
Yeah, Malcolm kind of told me that story.
Yeah, we were just kind of stumbling around, lost, didn't know what the fuck we were doing, and not to lump me into them yet, but I know they didn't know what they were doing because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
and I get it.
I don't know, man. We just kept hanging out, and me and Trevor started working together, and we was working these 12-hour shifts, and one day we were going to work hungover because, you know, we'd always, after work, man, we always got these six-pack of Milwaukee's Beast, the tall boys, get them for $3.35 at the Minute Mart or whatever, used to. So we'd drink that, go to bed, we woke up hungover, and he was like, man, I'll never forget it, man, sun's beating in the damn windshield, and he's got one eye open. He's like, dude, let's just start a band. And I was like, believe it or not, I was like, nah. I was like, no shit. I was like, nah, dude. I was like, I'm a big fan of you. And I was like, y'all do y'all's thing, man.
Right.
Y'all are really cool. Y'all got something cool.
Stick
y'all go do that. And I'm going to be there. Fuck, I'll be front row every time.
Yeah.
I believed in them that much.
Oh, no, I get that.
And a few weeks go by, I'm hating life. A couple weeks, probably a week. And I'm like, okay, I just turned down something that I probably shouldn't have. So then I looked at him. We was at work, and I was like, dude, fuck it. I was like, let's start that band. So it was like, from there, it was like, cool. And he was like, man, dude, me and you play guitar. Malcolm play bass. I was like, well, Malcolm's a better guitar player than I am. I'll give it to him. Man, Malcolm's got some hot lits. He'll appreciate that. And I was like, man, I'm a rhythm player anyway. I'd just prefer to play bass.
So it just made sense to you.
Made perfect sense. And yeah, and I remember just we all got in a room together and jammed for the first time, and it was like, that's cool. Because I'd never experienced
it. But it clicked immediately.
Absolutely, man. I'd never experienced anything like that.
Now, was that still in 2015?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this was at the very start of 2015. We're talking like this is probably October or November at this point.
Okay.
And then a few short months later, we turned around and put out a full-length.
Didn't take long.
No, we didn't.
And when you guys established, and was it Clayton? No, it was Malcolm. Malcolm told me the story of where the name came from. Uh-huh. It was a Cadillac 3 song.
Yeah.
Which became, what was their first name? The Cadillac Black.
Yeah, they were the American Bang.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's...
It was like a B side song title called Kiss Kiss Bang
Kiss,
Bang,
Kiss, Bang
or Bang.
Just Kiss Kiss Bang.
There was no Bang. Yeah, I don't know why I always think there was.
Just because it's
one point
that
you
movie.
All had two Bang Bangs, but I think some of the people posting shit were saying
bang,
this
bang.
New band Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, bang is awesome. So I think people were getting it wrong, but I saw it somewhere.
It's a Robert Downey Jr. movie.
Okay,
it's a Kiss Kiss.
But
bang,
I still
bang.
Think people were typing it. Saying there's this new band, they're really cool, and they'd fuck up the name.
They still type it.
they still do it.
Yeah. Well, see, what we've been getting now, and I don't know if people's, like, saying this to, like, call us a band, or if people are saying this because they, like, don't know if the extra G or if the extra bang should be there. But what we're getting now is Kiss Kiss Bang Band with the D on the end.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, are you calling us a band, or did you mean to put G and just...
Well, that's
typoed.
Typical shit for like press.
Yeah,
they'll always refer to you as a band,
right?
Or an artist.
But I'm cool with the band. It's just But Kiss Kiss Bang
Lower
does look a lot better.
Band,
right? No big B.
But I see a lot of people refer to you guys as KKB, which makes sense. But that is how. And again, if anybody listening to this, go back through the Sound Atlas on thesoundatlas.com. You can find Malcolm Warren's podcast, and you can find Trevor Smith's episode, and Clayton has an episode. So you were the missing link here.
I was, yeah.
But their story's been told. I think a lot of people know of the band name and what obviously happened. But from your side of the story, when it did start coming together in rehearsals and stuff, you all wrote pretty fast. And I think, again, it's like you were saying earlier about everyone came into this with a pretty good amount of history behind their own, you know, making. And so you put that in a room, and obviously Clayton came in later, but you and Trevor and Malcolm alone came into this with a pretty decent history behind you. So the songwriting wouldn't have taken that long. You had ideas. They had ideas.
Yeah.
It just happened very quickly.
And, I mean, even Corbin, you got to lump him into this. He was a big part of it.
Right.
A big part of, initial. So we started writing songs immediately off the jump. And it was, we wrote a lot of songs. I think our first full-length demo album was like, I think it was 10 songs, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But we had probably wrote 15.
Yeah.
And honestly, probably had 20.
You scrap them.
Yeah, that we just had ideas that just didn't make it.
Well, some things just stick better than others, but
absolutely.
That's just common writing.
And
especially writing something new, brand new name, brand new band, brand new everything.
And you're experimenting with
sounds.
You're
just taking
you don't know what your sound is.
You think are the better ones, the ones you have more believe in, then maybe you're... Friends come along and hear one and go, man, that's a great song. And the three of you are like, well, we liked it, but we didn't think it was great.
Somebody outside
comes
points
in and goes, no, that's a great song.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's when you're like, okay, well, then we're going to do it because they're not in the band. They're not even a musician.
Fresh
so
ears.
So you have to understand the fan outlook of what, someone's seeing you guys doing can make a big impact on what songs get chosen and what songs don't.
Yeah, 100%. Man, the goal since this band started is just to write good songs.
Yeah.
You know, we do have some songs that I guess cater to radio a little more than some others, but it's not. But I can honestly say 100% we don't write
songs
for radio.
It's not like you sit down and go, we need to write a song for radio.
For radio, yeah. It's got to be on radio.
It's gotta be on radio.
Listen,
it what's comes natural.
Right. Radio, to me, I'm speaking separate from the band. You're speaking to me for a second. I don't give a fuck about radio. I give a fuck about having a good song.
Radio don't give a fuck about you.
No, they probably don't, and that's fine. but I mean that in the lightest sense.
I understand. I
don't want every song to have to be seven, eight, 9 minutes long.
I can relate to you on this because some days I feel like, why do I keep writing all these songs without cussing in them? Because that's what I want to do is say fucking shit like every other word.
Every other word, absolutely.
But then I'm like, well, I can't do that because then it wouldn't get played on the radio.
Yeah. So we do look at it like that. We have censored some songs out quite a bit.
I mean, you have to.
It's
just like that. I don't know. I wouldn't want to go through and edit shit.
No.
Beeps.
No. But, I don't care about radio because I look at songs probably, not to put me on different than anybody
else. Okay,
this is
your episode.
Man, I know, but I'm
you
not a
tell me.
But I'm not a dickhead. All right, and it's gonna sound like I am. I just look at songs, I guess, a little different than some people. Like,
it's okay,
dude. In songs, like to me, like a good song is a song that has, you know, I mean, it just depends on what kind of song you're writing too.
It's a mood thing.
Absolutely,
it's a day thing.
It's an emotion.
Yeah,
like you've got to have fluidity going out throughout the song.
Yeah.
Like you. And different parts play in that. Like,
of course.
You, like, there's a part on When It Rains that is just, it's just an, I can't really point it out right now without, because it would, you just confused, I guess. But
get everybody in here.
Yeah.
Show
play
me
it real about. Quick. Play it real quick. Show them what I'm talking about. But no, man, I remember us literally sitting down and being like, should this part even be here?
Right.
And the whole time I'm not like, not mad or anything, but I'm like, no, guys, listen, this has to be here because like this is a very emotional part. Not to get off on, like on that, but like it some like little parts like that sets you up and create like this atmosphere and this experience.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's almost like what you're hearing can be almost visual.
You can feel it.
Yeah,
you can feel it. That is one of my biggest things that I took away from church and more so altar call. I know how to play music that's going to be really soft and sweet,
right?
To make somebody like be like, "Why don't you come up, and give your heart to the Lord or something?" You know. But I like it. I like incorporating that because when you're at a show, as much as I love getting fucking my hair whipped back from somebody playing some badass riff,
right?
As much as I love that, I love to really soft and sweet, even if it's a little 5-10 second part, something to just make me feel some type of way. You know what I mean?
I mean, obviously, I understand
that. Yeah.
I speak it.
But it's like, that's...
I'm a terrible podcast interview person for music.
I'm a terrible interviewee.
No, you're fine. It's just, I would think it would be easier for someone that's not a musician and just a fan to ask these questions. But when you all talk, it's like, you know, I understand.
We have an understanding.
I've done that.
Yeah,
I've been there. So the band Kiss Kiss Bang formed in 2015.
Yeah.
As we are taping this, it is 2019.
It is September 2019.
You've been a solid band for a good 4 years,
going on,
give or take.
Yeah, actually, it'll be 4 years next month, I think.
Yeah. Really?
Or next couple months, something like that.
Ballpark.
Terrible with dates.
But that's pretty cool. And you guys have not only accomplished a lot in the time that you've been a band. You've released a few records. I mean, you did the first record, and then you had an EP,
mm-hmm.
Hearts on Fire, right? Yep. You've put out some cool videos. I love the first video. Like,
thank you.
It was on top of the parking structure.
Yeah.
And I was pissed because I wanted to film a video
the
parking structure. I can't do that now because they did it. And then I was going to make another video, and Black Gold recently shot a video at the fucking skate park, and I'm like, well, fuck, now I can't do that.
No, and that's
so cool.
I'm just
going to be copying all these people.
Man,
our town's limited on where you could go.
I want to say, I thought that skate park was genius. Because
it was great.
We had mentioned something about it, And I'm glad those guys got to it.
Honestly. I'm glad they beat me to it because we've got some songs that are fucking punk, rock, skateboard music.
Perfect for
and
that.
I was like, we got to set up in the bowl. And people skating around us. And everybody's like, yeah, we got to do that. And then they did it.
Oh, that's so, that is so late. That is so late 90s, and I love it.
Oh, fuck, it's great. The problem is it's got to be black and white.
Has to be. Fishbowl. Fishbowl, too.
So you guys have been doing great stuff. Big things you've done. Obviously, you've not forgotten your hometown. You've not forgotten anything about where you come from. You still play the small stages. You play anything that is fitting to what you all want to do. But you've had some awesome opportunities. You've opened for big bands on big stages. You've played big venues and halls all over. You've done touring. I would say it's Weekend Warrior kind of stuff, but you do go out.
Weekend Warrior.
Yeah, because you all still have your jobs and stuff.
Yeah, we have to.
But you're working to the gold where you don't have a job, and your job would be traveling on a tour bus and playing music.
Yeah. Dude, me personally, I would like to be a little busier than probably most. Like, I'm talking like...
part of the game.
I want to play like 4 or 5 times a week.
The cards fall into place if you all have the same goal in mind, which I believe you all do.
Yeah.
As an outsider looking in, it looks to me like this band's got nothing but strong potential in the future.
Thank you.
But it's just a matter of you're making those steps, and I think you guys are being smart about the procedure of what steps you take. You're not saying yes to everything,
and you're
not saying no to everything, and you're not being lazy, and you're not, you know, I could go on and on about all the different levels of things that there are involved in it, but it seems to me, as someone that's been in that position, I've done the things that you all have done, I think you're doing smart things.
Thank you. We are very very articulate, I guess. That might be the right word. Yeah. Dude, everything is so thought out, and it's like sometimes, you know, some stuff we just don't get to do,
right?
And some things we do. We've been very dude, just lucky with some of the opportunities we've got. Not that we haven't worked for it.
No, you've earned it.
Thank you.
You've earned every
bit
of it.
Thank you.
But again, you all came into this, like you said, with strong backgrounds. You've learned hard lessons leading into this band forming.
Mm-hmm.
All of you individually had done other things that were the blueprint of what started this band off on the right foot. Because you'd done this, you've made mistakes, you've worked with certain people or venues that you learn hard lessons from. You see what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally.
So I understand it.
Yeah, and
I think it's been, obviously as an outsider looking in, again, it looks like everything came easy to you guys, but I know it didn't.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the fans might be like, oh, man, this band started, and they wrote some really good songs, and boom, look at them.
Overnight, yeah,
there's nothing
overnight.
They fucking earned every bit of that.
Thank you. There's nothing.
Phone calls and emails constantly.
Yeah.
And not really pestering, but just stern. You're stern on what you want. You've got the eye on the prize, and that's the goal.
Yeah, I will say, man, and it's we are very fortunate that, like, all these guys, you know, us four, we're very level-headed, like you just said, eyes on the prize. We all have the same goal. We just have little different back roads to get there. And so that's where, like, you know, we never argue. We really don't. But we, you know, have little disagreements, but it's like, no. I'm not going to get mad at you because you want to go the same place I do.
Right.
We just need to figure out the best way to get there.
Right.
And there's,
like,
no egos.
Everyone has a map.
Yeah.
That's a different path.
Yeah.
But they all end at the same place.
Yeah, absolutely. Siri, take me to the top.
Yeah.
Quickest way, please.
But it seems like Kiss Kiss Bang has nothing but a promising future. From my standpoint, I mean, I'm assuming that's what you all are aiming for.
That's the goal, man.
So going into 2020, going into the remainder of 2019 as we are sitting here speaking, which it is the month of September, by the way, what is on the horizon for you guys? And I mean, obviously, I'm not asking you to be specific on dates and news and anything of that nature, but what can the fans expect from you guys coming up?
Okay, so in 2020, we're gonna kick 2020's ass. I'm gonna go and let you know.
Do it.
I'm gonna go and let you know. We are. See, we're fixing to start writing for. We don't know what we want to do yet. Okay,
you know? You're always writing.
We're always writing. Always writing.
You don't really know. Like, you don't have any game plan of we're gonna make this record. It's gonna have this many songs. It's gonna have this kind of sound and style. And,
exactly.
But you're just gonna be you,
right?
And do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so. People can just expect something.
Yeah, you expect there will be new music. You'll get new music by the end of the year.
Okay.
Like, it won't be, probably be a single, if I had to guess. Nothing wrong with that. And you might get a little visual. I don't know.
Maybe a double.
Maybe. I mean, we're looking at it like you got your full lengths, you got your EPs.
Yep.
But singles kind of be the way to go, or they're seeming like the way to go right now. So yeah.
People have a very super short attention span.
Right, absolutely.
So you put out a single, you put out a video, and then you do it again 2 or 3 months later, and just keep playing.
Exactly. I think we're going to wind up. And I don't mean to speak on this. Listen, I can just come in here and tell you a decision that we just made 2 seconds ago.
Okay.
And in 5 minutes, it is subject to change.
That's true. And that's why I'm not asking you to be detailed.
It is absolutely subject to change.
So you can just say, man, we're going to do a bunch of cool shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it.
Hang out.
New music all of 2020. I can't wait for it. And we're just trying to get out there the best way that we can. And
I think you're doing great.
Thank you. And the best way that we know how, man, is just keep writing songs and go play music.
From the ground up.
The ground up,
and that's
what you've
been doing.
Yeah.
Since the beginning of this,
we've been very fortunate, man. Our social media, all the time.
Yeah,
there's so much engagement on it.
Well, you guys also use it as the proper tool. I think it's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that about the way the band advertises and promotes things. Not even promoting; it's just staying in touch with the fans. You don't just put videos up and listen to this song and here's our next show. Like, you interact with people with pictures of just hanging out or going to shows and doing stuff and other bands. Like, you guys are very supportive of other bands and other venues.
Yeah. Well, man, we want to see people shine.
Of course.
You know, absolutely, man. We're all very, very genuine people. I will say that, man.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, I'll be up front with you. I'll be 100% blunt. And I told this to Warren, Malcolm, after the interview. But I was one of those people in the beginning that were like, man, fuck these guys. Bunch of posers.
Yeah.
And then I got to know you guys. I judged the book by the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I apologized. I apologized to him. I apologized to all of you, because I was just the typical other musician who was jealous and looking at it from the wrong point of view.
Man, I appreciate that.
And I'm sincere.
Thank you.
I'm not fucking holding that back, because I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it, but I mean, I'm ashamed that I felt that way or looked at it that way, because I met Malcolm a long time ago and I thought he was just blowing me off, or you know what I mean, like he was cool and he was nice, but I didn't feel like there was a connection. And then I got to know him. And that was the problem on my end, is I didn't take time to sit down and just fucking talk to the guy.
Right.
I thought he'd just walk up to me like, oh, yeah, you've been in the scene for a long time.
But I think it's easy to judge something like that. And then when you see like 5 kids running around, that's what we are, kids, at that time, at that point in time. When you see 5 kids running around with whiskey bottles playing music, that's...
It's true. And I think, again,
it's very douchey.
It's a jealousy thing. Some of us older guys didn't have it as easy as some of the younger generation might have it.
Mm-hmm.
But I woke up really quick, because I realized this isn't, again, a band that's being handed shit. You all earned it. So I apologize.
That's okay. Look, man, I'll say this too. I want to say this just to kind of elaborate on that a little bit. When me and Trevor lived together and we was playing music, and I'm not ashamed to say this at all, we generally only booked places that served food so we could eat that day.
No, I get it.
You know what I mean?
Again, like, these are the things I've learned over time,
mm-hmm.
that I
it's
have
just something we didn't make
different
public.
Amount of respect for it, because I think a lot of people see the pictures and they see the videos and it looks like these are rich kids. They've got money. They're working with big wigs behind the scenes. They're getting all these awesome gigs because they know the right people. Had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
That's how I looked at it, but I was wrong. And when I got to talk to him and I interviewed him and I talked to Clayton, which I knew a little bit about Clayton because of Undandana, and I knew a lot about his history because they were very active in this music scene, and I knew a lot about them. But again, he was kind of a late addition to this band anyway. But like, I just thought, like a lot of people probably did.
Oh, I'm sure.
You all had shit handed to you.
I'm sure.
But you didn't.
Dude, we heard talk too.
I know you did.
Like, we heard a lot.
I never said anything publicly.
Well,
but I mentally was thinking it, and I may have been falling in the trap of hearing other people say that shit, maybe. But I don't even know why I'm being so public about this. But I just
I really appreciate that. You don't understand. I really appreciate that.
But, dude, I mean, I've got to know you guys over the course of a little bit of time. You know, we hung out together at the Spillway that
morning.
And I had a totally different perception. And I came home and I told my wife, I was like, I had these guys all wrong. Judged them by the book on the cover. And I was wrong.
I appreciate that. All right, so now it's my turn to write my wrong.
Do it.
My turn to write my wrong. So I was actually wanting to tell you this at the beginning, but we got to talking, so I was going to tell you.
Well, that's what we do.
Yeah, you know. So the for those who didn't know, for nobody that knows besides me and Dean, we was hanging out at Rib Liquors not that long ago. This is when you first asked me to come on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Wolf Island, Cosmonauts was playing. Go check them out. You asked me to do it, and I was really weird about it, and I wanted to apologize because...
Everybody's weird the first time I ask them, so they're like, well, I don't really want to talk about me.
I just had a lot of...
It's not about you. It's about you and everybody in your life.
I just had a lot of shit going on. And,
no, it's fine.
You know,
you kind of explained that to me, too, later on. I think we'd message back and forth.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah. A lot of mental shit, man. But we riding the wave.
Yep.
So, now, I am sorry for that.
Don't worry about it.
My fault.
I'm sorry I misjudged you guys.
No, it's cool, man. Hey, and, like... I don't know, man. That makes me feel a lot better because, you know, like I said, we heard some talk, not from anybody in particular. We just kind of heard things get back.
I know.
But we never heard anybody say anything. So it was like, it was frustrating and really disheartening because, like, everybody's got us wrong. All wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, we're, don't, and it's.
I think because you get to do good things and awesome big things, it can change you. Like, and people might pick up on that.
Oh, I think it totally does.
Oh, this guy's got to go open up for so-and-so. And
some people it totally does, bro.
I get
that. And that's a shame.
But
that's not what's happened here.
I've been through a lot of the things that you all have gone through and are going through and will go through. Just keep level-headed.
Absolutely.
Don't ever forget who you really are.
No, man.
And that will carry you a lot further than... the immediate idea that you're better than others, you know what I mean?
Dude.
Which a lot of us can fall into.
Yeah.
Because musically, as musicians, if you're better than another musician, you might know it, but if you act like it, then it will show.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That's when you're a dick. That's when you're the dick. That's when
I was for a long time.
I didn't mean it like that.
No, I mean it because I was. I've been apologizing to people for 10 fucking years because I was a fucking dick.
I really appreciate how how you're right and wrong, though.
Well, I'm just trying to.
That's cool.
Some people won't accept
dude,
it.
Dude,
okay.
Man, like, people kill me nowadays because they can't even accept when they're wrong. I'll be the first one to tell you when I'm wrong. The first one, dude.
It's just,
like, people don't.
It's part
of
life, man.
People different now, man. Y'all weird. Take me home.
You are home.
That is true.
By the way, we've been recording this episode in the Kiss Kiss Bang house.
That's right, where we practice at.
Yeah.
We're out here in the garage.
Does it have a name?
It's had a few names.
Sacred ground of any kind?
It's been cheesily called the Kiss Kiss Hang.
Oh, I like that.
You like it?
I like that.
It's stuck for 4 years. That's funny, man. The first place that we practiced was off of, we lived there. It was off the Green River on the Butler County line going out on 185.
Is that the basement?
No, that was the old grocery store. The old grocery store on the right.
I've seen video of you guys in, like, an under stairs basement. Kind of thing.
Okay, so what that was is Malcolm used to live with Brandon Taylor. Bass player for Memory.
Yep.
Great guy. And he's also 254 Productions. Yep. They do all the video work for us. He's amazing.
Has a sound atlas.
He does.
Hasn't aired yet.
I didn't know about this. Brandon, what's up, dog?
You all might actually be close to each other.
Hey, back to back. Come on, cuz. So when Malcolm lived with Brandon, it was funny. Memory would practice on one side of the basement.
Oh, cool.
And then we'd have curtains set up and we'd practice on the other side. And we just, picked alternate nights.
That's a cool story, man.
Oh, it is really dope.
Well, speaking of local music and speaking of Memory, I like to close these out with this awesome question. Who are you a fan of and who inspires you in this music scene?
Ooh, I like that. See, man, it's like I'm really a fan of... There's a lot of bands that I haven't got to check out.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a common problem.
Okay.
Because we all... are busy with our own bands and schedules.
Exactly. And, I'm a third shifter, so I'm... anytime. Help at all. Yeah, I'm fixing to have to go to work in a few. So, whenever...
We'll wrap this up.
Oh, we're good. Shit, I'll be late. They'd be all right. So, there's a lot of bands I haven't got to check out.
Right.
But Josephine's are killing it. Yep. Listen, Wolf Island is killing it.
Yep.
And listen, I'm so, happy for them. I hate that we lost our brother Cody.
Right.
I love that Eli's getting a fill-in. That is an amazing story.
Have you seen them yet?
I didn't play that
show with them.
Okay. No.
I've seen them twice now with Eli.
That's cool. I heard he's killing it. Yeah, they did do two shows.
Because I played two shows. The two shows, Eli's first show, I didn't play, but I went because I wanted to let him know. And I wanted to let them know that we loved them.
Absolutely.
And we were absolutely behind 100% with what they had decided to do. And I've watched Eli kind of grow up. I don't really know him.
Mm-hmm.
I know of him. I know of a lot of people that he's close to. And obviously he grew up with John Fred and Andrew from Otis. And
good company.
Yeah. I mean, the kid had everything he needed as a drummer. To learn from.
Absolutely.
So that was awesome. But he's right where he needs to be because of how close he was to Cody.
Mm-hmm.
Like That's a brother. It's like a little brother.
It's an amazing story.
It is a great story. And I think a lot of people know it or will know of it in time because I'm going to get it on one of these tapes. But I went to see him play their first debut with Eli at Spillway. And then we played a show with them for the Cody benefit, Cody Jam. And so I've seen him play twice, but I think he's only played three or four shows as we're taping this.
Yeah, I don't think it's been very many.
They're all decent. He played the Baron, Bands on the Baron thing with Luther and Sixth Floor and all that.
That's the one I know about, that one in Spillway.
He did the Harley Davidson. That's right, kickoff for the
I had to work that night, man.
Yeah, I missed it too.
I was expecting to get fired, so I was going in.
It was Wolf Island and Gravel Switch was there, and Kyle Daniel was there. Yeah, it was a really good local music band night at Harley Davidson, but it was a fucking Thursday night.
Right.
Man, it's a school night.
Dude, so we played that last year, and it was so cold. And it
really?
Was on a Thursday,
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. There's so many people there, man. I mean, that parking lot was bad.
Yeah. It looked like it was crowded.
Ridiculous.
They had it all roped off and stuff.
Did they hit this time?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I drove past it earlier in the day. I was like, oh, that's a good stage. It should be a good show. But I couldn't go.
Yeah.
I got a kid.
That sucks.
I got shit to do. I'm an adult.
I understand that. So we was talking about...
Well, I knew you were a big fan of Josephine's. I know you guys are close. I know band-wise, you all are very close.
Mm-hmm.
You're both connected pretty well with the Blackstone camp and good friends with those guys. And you've both got opportunities to play with them. So, obviously, that's an awesome thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they've helped both of you out tremendously.
Sure. Yeah.
And I knew you were a fan of Wolf Island.
Yeah, I love them. Love them, boys.
So that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Who else out
and
there?
And then, a band that you've been playing with for here recently, I really want to check out the Daddy Sisters.
You haven't seen it? Oh, Daddy Sisters are great.
I haven't got to check them yet.
Have I seen a lot of shows, I played drums for Daddy Sisters
the other night, didn't you?
Speaking. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was last weekend.
That's so tight.
Because Chick messaged me on like Monday or Tuesday. The show was on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I got a text from Chick on like Tuesday, said, "Hey, Jake can't make it to the show. Something came up. So I'm just going to do a solo set of just me and a guitar." I was like, "Oh, fuck that. No." I was like, "I play drums.
Yeah.
I know your songs.
I got you.
I got this." And so we rehearsed. We rehearsed one time, and I got what I needed, made some cheat sheets, and then played the gig. And it was great.
That's tight, man.
You've got to go see
where was
the
that
dances.
At? I'm
that
sorry.
Was at the Dive in Cape
Dive.
City.
Right. So isn't that a fairly new bar?
Fairly new.
Or am I just thinking of something else?
Set up on the stage,
mm-hmm.
and then you all have to stand on the floor.
On the floor, right.
And
right
you're,
on.
You're a large band, so I wish you luck if you
fucking
ever want
tight.
To play the Dive.
Fucking tight.
No, I think she's working on expanding. So cool. I would say in due time, I would see Kiss Kiss Bang playing at the Dive.
I'll be honest
or
with you.
Or maybe a street party.
I just heard from her, actually.
Letitia?
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah.
If you if you all want to attempt playing in such a tight space, I highly recommend it.
I want to check it out, man. I want to check
cool.
it out.
It's a great place. She's doing a good thing up there.
That's awesome.
But yeah, Daddy Sisters okay. obviously has become
so,
a Bowling Green like institution at this point.
I just want to say
great.
I gotta see what
band.
It's about. That's awesome. I tell you what, another band that I am a fan of, for real, and this is funny. I'm not actually just giving shout outs right now. I like this band. I am a fan of.
I need the scoop.
All right, you finna get a scoop. So I got a cool story with this too, actually. But have you heard of the band Aluxus here in Bowling Green?
Yes,
dude, love those dudes, man. They are
very underground.
I know. It's like I don't even know what is it like. Prog kind of stuff, maybe. I don't know what to call it. I really don't.
I would say that would be accurate, but it's like very.
I just don't know what to call it, but it's so like it's so melodic,
yeah.
And it's really like neat, and it's
heard
just different
and very cool.
It's
but
like
I haven't seen it live.
Oh, dude, they're good. So the piano player and singer, and then the guitar player, and they do harmonies. The piano player is Cole Arnett. Me and him got into Switchfoot together at the same time. We were best friends back in sixth grade.
That's cool.
Yeah. From like bumfuck over yonder, you where we're from. And then the guitar player, Jack Dickerson. Hell, I'm pretty sure he's from Nortonville too. I mean, I've known him since fucking kindergarten.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're
so,
here.
And so we're all here. Yeah. It's so tight, man.
That says a lot, though, that a lot of musicians from outside areas have
are
come
here yeah.
for the sake of music.
Absolutely.
It's not like you moved to Bowling Green to find a good job and a house.
Yeah.
You've moved here because you've heard this music scene's good, and a lot of people have come here because of the bands that have come from this area. And you, my good sir, are in one of the best bands in this town.
Hey, thank
you. And you all call
lot.
Bowling Green home, do you not?
Absolutely.
You're not a Louisville
band.
Dude,
I'm here, brother.
Yeah,
I'm here.
A Nashville band.
I'm here for life.
You're not throwing that bullshit out there to make it look bigger
no,
and better.
Listen, Bowling Green, Kentucky, man. It's where it's at, man.
KKBG.
Bowling Green, bitch.
Yep. That's awesome. Well, I cannot thank you enough for your time.
Oh, of course, man.
We
Thank
did talk
me.
About this months ago. I think, when was that? May?
It was like July, I feel like. No, fuck no.
Was
it's
it
September.
Not that long?
No, it was in June, I feel like.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
The,
but still, as we're speaking, that's like a few, you know,
yeah,
four
a few months
ago
yeah.
or whatever.
Fuck.
So.
Doesn't feel that long. Feels forever.
But you're a busy man.
Yep.
You're in a busy band. I'm a busy man.
Yes, sir.
I'm now in a busy band. But we got it.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Andrew, and keep up the good work, and I wish you all nothing but success.
Absolutely. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me. Later, dudes.